Hello, everybody, and thanks for listening to this week's Public Sector Inc. podcast. This week's podcast is a little unusual in that we have a four-person roundtable. Our article this week is actually a collection of short write-ups of governors' State of the State addresses or other introductions to what their policy agenda is going to look like as we enter new terms in most states. We certainly expect public employee compensation and union and bargaining issues to be near the top of the agenda in most states around the country this year. So we thought it was worthwhile to take a look at what governors are saying about those issues and then how their actual records match up with their rhetoric. There are 8 states profiled on the website this week, and we have the authors of 4 of those profiles here with us today. Really happy with the quality of the panel that we have, both in terms of who's participating and then the interesting cross-section of states that we're representing. Here today, we have people talking about 2 new governors and 2 existing governors. Those include 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats, and I think that they provide interesting contrasts on how governors can succeed or fail in approaching public employee reform in their states. We're joined by Paul Kersey of the Mackinac Center, where he's the Director of Labor Policy. Paul will be talking about Michigan's brand new Republican Governor Rick Snyder. We're joined also by Bob Williams, who is the founder and a senior fellow at the Evergreen Freedom Foundation in Washington State, where he has over 3 decades of involvement in public policy. He's also the president of State Budget Solutions, and he'll be talking about Christine Gregoire, who's been the governor in Washington State for nearly 6 years now. We're also joined by E.J. McMahon, who's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Empire Center for State Policy. E.J. has a similarly long tenure in Albany with a very deep knowledge of public policy there. And he'll be talking about our new governor, Andrew Cuomo. And then I, Josh Barrow, will be talking about Chris Christie in New Jersey, who's entering his 2nd year after a very high-profile 1st year of his term. EJ, can you give us a little bit of overview about what Andrew Cuomo had to say? Because I think some people around the country were a little surprised, especially because he's a Democrat, at the forcefulness of some of his rhetoric. I think you might be a little more skeptical.
Well, Andrew Cuomo's State of the State, in some ways, the rhetoric was a continuation of the rhetoric he ran on in the campaign. The broad strokes of Governor Cuomo's rhetoric is fiscally conservative. In fact, it's downright Reagan-esque. He talks about heavy taxes and spending levels. He says that we've been spending at unsustainable rates, that this must end, that we need radical fundamental change, and we need it now. He even began his State of the State in an unorthodox way. He staged it in a convention center hall rather than a legislative chamber and used the statistical slides, a PowerPoint presentation, to actually highlight the statistics about New York's high tax levels and high spending levels and how much they've grown. Now, all of this is more or less consistent with his campaign rhetoric, but might have been surprising if you hadn't heard him much in the past year, and it's striking coming from a Cuomo in particular, because if you had heard his father at all, was a sort of an icon of liberalism at the peak of his career, and never sounded like this. The devil's in the details, of course, and the State of the State was where Governor Cuomo provided the first glimpse of where he intends to go and how he intends to tackle some of these challenges. And his approach there is, as I wrote about it in one article, he's sort of speaking loudly and carrying a small stick. So far, he is not actually making any game-changing proposals. He, on Medicaid, for instance, Medicaid is the second biggest part of our state budget after school aid. It's wildly out of control, extravagant by national standards, the most expensive Medicaid program in the country. What he said he was going to do about Medicaid was form a task force, or as he put it, a redesign team, comprised of people he called stakeholders, including all the healthcare union bosses and hospital lobbyists who helped get us into this position, and that they would get together with various state officials and other stakeholders, so-called, from the business community, and come up with ways to meet a savings target that he has not given them yet. He did the same in the area that he calls mandate reform, which actually would embrace everything from pensions to other compensation issues to contracting rules. He kicked that to a redesign team also, and that team has stakeholders on it, including public sector unions. So this is not necessarily a recipe for structural change, although in the case of the pension and other issues, I think he's still leaving himself room to maneuver and waiting to see whether other parties in the legislature are willing to tug things further in a stronger direction.
we gave grades to some of these governors, but EJ, you didn't give one to Cuomo yet, I think, because all of this is so open-ended. We're sort of waiting to see. When do you think we'll have a better idea of where Cuomo's headed?
I think we'll have a better idea. The next better idea we will have is going to be next week, February 1st, which is when he will present the executive budget. Our fiscal year is unique here. It begins April 1st. So the executive budget is presented February 1st and is supposed to be adopted by April 1st, although it's often late. The real final grade will come around the time the budget is being negotiated and adopted, because in a style that actually is very Cuomo-esque in the sense of his father's style, he's left many things sort of open and unsettled, and you won't know for sure what he actually stands for until the final deals come through. There is one thing I should mention that I didn't add. In the campaign, the most explicit, big-time, big-frame proposal he made was that he would cap our property tax levies at a growth rate of 2% a year. We have very high property taxes in New York. This would be a game-changer if done. He repeated that through the campaign and repeated again on his State of the State his insistence on doing that. However, also characteristically, as we sit here more than 3 weeks into his term, he has not yet presented the legislature with a bill doing that. That's another reason for an incomplete grade at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a really key issue. Often when people look at the state property tax rankings, New Jersey's at the top, and New York is thought of as a high property tax state, but not quite as high as states like New Jersey and New Hampshire. The thing people need to understand there is that property taxes are very low in New York City, where there's a substantial city income tax. When you look at property tax rates outside New York City, they're actually very similar to New Jersey's national leading property taxes. So it's really a key issue here, like it always is in New Jersey. Why don't we turn to Paul, because Paul's also talking about a new governor who also, sort of like Andrew Cuomo, were left guessing a little bit about what he's really going to do this year. The key difference, of course, is that that governor is a Republican. Paul, why don't you talk about what came in Rick Snyder's address?
Well, if Andrew Cuomo spoke loudly and carried a small stick, then I think you could say that Governor Rick Snyder spoke softly, and we don't know what he's carrying. The speech that he gave was disappointing, but he's got opportunities to fill in the gaps that he left. The governor did touch upon, briefly, upon $54 billion that we have, unfunded liabilities, and he did make some sort of case for changes to government employee compensation. But he really didn't lay out any range for what his goals would be or what kinds of mechanisms he would have to pursue them. Now, Snyder did leave himself room to fill in the details. He's got the budget address. He may have decided that would be a much more appropriate time to get into the nitty-gritty details of government employee benefits and budgeting. He also announced that he was going to do a series of presentations. One of them will be on government reform in March, and that may be the situation where he goes in and addresses government employee collective bargaining and benefit structure. So there's opportunities there. The one thing about it is, though, that at the same time that he's doing this, Rick Snyder said that he wants to have an accelerated budget process, and he wants to have a two-year budget, and he wants to have that wrapped up by the end of May. So he hasn't left himself a whole lot of time, or the legislature a whole lot of time, to do a lot of things. And obviously government employee benefits and the budget are going to be very closely entwined.
I know that both in New York and then I'll talk about a little later in New Jersey, a huge issue in these budget discussions is always the relationship between the state government and local governments. Nearly all government payroll is at the local level, and a huge part of state budgets is aid to local governments. That's been a big part of the reform agenda here in the Northeast. Is that something that might be a key part of that government reform agenda that we're going to see in Michigan?
That's very true in Michigan. We estimate that in an average year, the state and local governments spend $5.7 billion on government employee benefits that we could save if government employee benefits were normalized, if they followed the pattern of the private sector for benefit, retirement, and health benefits. Out of that, $5 billion of that is local governments, and $2 billion of that is just public schools. So a lot of what has gone wrong in the state of Michigan really has been done at the local level.
Great. Well, that'll be also something that we're watching, and it sounds like that's also sort of a March timeline for where we're going to see our next key update on what the governor's up to. Why don't we bring in Bob now? Bob's going to be talking about something very different. This is a governor entering her seventh year of the governorship, and we'll all be talking a little bit about Chris Christie and how, you know, the reforms he's been pushing. I think we wouldn't say that Chris Gregoire has really been a reform leader. What's going on in Washington State, Bob?
Well, you're right. Chris Gregoire has not been a reform leader. And interesting, in her State of the State address, she didn't even talk about state employee compensation. Yet in Washington State, state employees' salaries, health care, and pensions are unsustainable. Now, in her budget, she did propose to raise the state employees' contribution to health care from 12% to 26%. But right after she proposed it, she settled with the union on raising it to 15% without even allowing any time for any negotiations or the legislature to get involved on that. Now, she has made one good proposal. She is proposing that they do away with the automatic cost of living increases for state employees. That's for existing employees and for new employees. But interestingly, she has not introduced a bill in the legislature, nor has anyone co-sponsored a bill to do that. So I don't know if this is just rhetoric or what. The other thing she did is she negotiated a 3% pay cut for existing employees, but also reduced the work hours. But interestingly on that, she has legislation that will have, for pension purposes, it considered that they got their regular pay, not the pay cut. Now, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that. Incredible. But in Washington State, we have an unfunded retiree health care liability between $7.5 and $10 billion, and she's not really addressing that at all. And that's something that, again, can be done. That is not considered a vested right like the pensions are. And the pensions, just in the last 2 years, we lost $16 billion in the stock market. So not only do you lose the $16 billion stock market, you lost that 8% assumed rate of return. So we have roughly a $24 billion loss over the last 3 years compared to where the legislature thought they'd be on pensions. And they're going to have to figure out how to address that in the future. So she is not considered a reform-minded one. We're hopeful that the legislature may wake up soon.
Well, that's all very uplifting, Bob. We didn't give a grade to Andrew Cuomo or Rick Snyder. We just felt like it was too early to tell. But we gave a pretty harsh grade to Chris Gregoire. We gave her a D, right, Bob?
Right, because, I mean, again, she may sound good at times, but then she always caves in. The interesting thing in Washington state law is the governor's budget director has to certify that the salary increases and health care benefits are sustainable. And the last 2 years, he did not certify they were sustainable. According to state law, then the governor cannot recommend a salary increase, and the legislature cannot grant it. But they did it anyway.
It's funny. I mean, people can see the other write-ups. We don't have everybody who wrote today. It sort of reminds me the most of what Eileen Norcross wrote about for us in Maryland. Again, with Governor Martin O'Malley, he's in the fifth year of his governorship, but it's a very similar sort of trying to muddle through the problem of unsustainable employee costs without really doing fundamental reforms, just patching over the budget with, you know, accounting tricks and one-time cuts and that sort of thing without really addressing the root problems, which is why the grade is so bad. I'm going to talk a little bit about Chris Christie. I sit here in New York, of course, but I've written a fair bit about New Jersey over the last year. And I gave Chris Christie a B, which will surprise some people because of all the adulation that he's gotten over the last year. And a B reflects a good record. It's actually the best grade we gave out to any governor so far. But I think that, you know, there are a few reasons that Christie deserves two cheers rather than three, both for his record over the last year and for the content of his State of the State address this year. The State of the State sort of started with a fair bit of self-congratulation about how far New Jersey has come. And, you know, they closed this huge $11 billion budget gap last year that was the largest in the country as a percentage of the budget. And Christie really did do a number of very good things during that term. That was mostly a very good budget deal that he cut that not only attended to that gap, but actually allowed to sunset a one-year temporary tax increase that his predecessor had put in. He got the legislature to pass a property tax cap that is not perfect, but that was a significant improvement over the status quo. And he seems to have awareness of what the flaws were in that property tax cap. It didn't cap growth in health care or pension costs, which are the two of the key drivers of rising expenses in local government. But he's pushing separate reforms that would separately control those cost areas. And if you cover those increases separately with separate limits so that they can't balloon more than a specified amount, then the cap can work, even though it has those exceptions. There are a couple of key problems with what Christie's been up to and what he's proposing, and both of them relate to public employee pensions. One is that he talks a lot in the speech about how they balanced the fiscal year 11 budget, but really that budget wasn't balanced because the state didn't make any of its required payment into the state's pension systems. It was supposed to put in a little more than $3 billion to cover the promises that it was making in that year to retirees and to start amortizing the very large funding gap that New Jersey has. New Jersey has some of the worst funded pension systems in the country. So really the budget, when you consider a $28 billion general fund, that budget was about 10% out of balance. And Christie had some good reasons for doing that. He started with a budget that was so wildly out of balance that it was going to be very difficult to bring it into true balance in 1 year. But since he's talking about bringing a culture of truth to Trenton, he probably should be more upfront about that budget not really being imbalanced and should be talking about what his plan is in the next few years to bring the budget into true balance. He's also proposed a pension reform plan that's in some ways a lot better than what other states are doing. Particularly, it involves cutbacks not just for new employees, but for future accrual of benefits by existing employees. And that's really key to achieving real cost control. Unfortunately, what the plan doesn't do is fundamentally change the structure of the system. He doesn't move from a defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan. And the risk there is that we'll see what's happened repeatedly in New York over the last four decades, where legislatures, when times are tough, enact, you know, tough pension reforms that are supposed to cut costs, and then the stock market goes up and a new union-friendly administration comes in and those reforms get undone. And Christie's reform plan is supposed to save a lot of money over 30 years, but Christie won't be governor for 30 years, and I very much fear that this reform will be undone sometime within a decade if they don't actually move to a defined contribution system. The other problem is that Christie is being very noncommittal about actually making those pension payments in the future. What he says is if we do these pension reforms, then we can start making our required pension contributions. And in my view, that's backwards. It's actually more important to make your pension contributions if you're not going to reform the system, because you have real danger that the system runs out of money. New Jersey will probably run out of money sometime within the decade in its pension funds if it doesn't start making those contributions. So the state really does need reform, but it also needs to make its required payments to be fiscally responsible and to balance its budget. So for those shortcomings, I gave Christie a B. He could rectify those. He could get all the way to an A+ if he did the right things on that. But so far, I think his record is good, but not great. EJ, in light of what Christie's been up to in Jersey, I think Cuomo is sort of, in a lot of ways, similar rhetoric-wise to Christie, just coming in 1 year later. I know you worry a little bit about how the Christie record is going to impact what Cuomo actually decides to do as governor of New York.
Yes, I think on the property tax gap in particular, Cuomo is promising what at the top level Christie delivered, that is a 2% cap on growth and property tax levies. As you noted, there's a big exception in there, though. He's excluded local pension costs from that cap. And if you did that in New York, you basically would be tantamount to having no cap at all. And I would be concerned that if Christie is seen as the baseline, especially given his reputation he has for being sort of like the conservative standard now among governors, that'll leave us with a bad tax cap.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we've run a little bit over time on this podcast, so I'm going to have to cut it off there. But I'd encourage everybody to read the write-ups on these states as well as several others. We have dispatches out of Massachusetts, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and there will be more states coming in coming weeks. And with that, thank you very much for listening to the Public Sector Inc. podcast.